All right, welcome back. My name is Keith Spreckles.
I'm Blair Coker.
And we are Occam Vinos, and we're picking up right where we left off, where we were driving to the Gredos Mountains outside of Madrid.
Yes.
So when we left Madrid, we took an hour and 25-minute drive to the Sierra de Gredos wine region in the Gredos Mountains. So into a town in the Avila province of about 2,000 people.
But it felt like 20.
Yeah, it did feel like 20. It was almost prehistoric. And in reality, compared to where we were the rest of Spain, it kind of was. But especially for our first look at what Spain was, it was a lot different than what we expected in a really good way.
Right.
But we were able to pull in and act like we knew how to find it right away.
Except we drove by it like three different times.
Yeah, we really did. And we kept on pulling up Google Maps, but that didn't really work because we didn't have connection to anything, even though American Express said we would.
And then we drove around it and then drove back around it and then went to the wrong entrance.
Yeah, to our credit though, it was a warehouse. And we love Daniel, who you'll get to meet in a second, but it was a warehouse. And it was right next to, and so it's across the street, but for those that haven't been to Europe before, and again, I'm going to try not to say that too many times when we record these podcasts, but for those that haven't been to Europe before, across the street is like, the street's like 10 feet wide. Like it wasn't like across the street. It was like a jump to a bullfighting ring. So we were like standing out front going, okay, we think this is the winery, but is that a bullfighting ring?
Like and literally right there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't look like it had been used for a while, but we didn't want to ask questions.
Right.
So we tried to park and we flipped around, and thanks to Jay for parking and not killing us. And we walked by the entrance to this winery. Real quick tangent. If this is not kind of telling you the journey we're about to take in the Gredos Mountains, this is kind of the same feeling we had the whole time. So we finally were like, okay, the address says it's here. And so we knocked on this like boiler room door is what it felt like.
This big heavy metal boiler room door.
Yeah. And it was like boom, 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 boom. And we didn't really hear anything. And then somebody opened and it was an Australian guy that spoke better English than we did. So we didn't. So Daniel Ramos, the owner of the Bodegas Daniel Ramos Winery, opened the door and let us right in. And we, you know, before we get too far into that, picture us at the beginning of this winery, right? But let's talk a little bit more about the region that we were in. Daniel's going to give you a rundown here in a minute about the history of the region, but I want to kind of give you from our perspective where you're at. So all the vineyards and all the wineries are about 600 to 1200 meters above sea level, which is high.
Right. Like my ears kept popping the entire time we were driving around.
Yeah. So although we're in these little villages, we are in the mountains, and it was a gradual drive up. So we didn't realize how high in the mountains we were until we were like out in the vineyards. So the reason why you might not have heard much about this region before is there's only 26 wineries. Even though it's really historic, there's 26 wineries, and when we get more into the vineyards themselves, they're really hard to farm, and they don't produce a lot, so they don't export a lot, and really the style itself is not something that people are like calling for.
Which is why you wouldn't go to the liquor store and see this right away. This isn't one that people know. It's not a famous region.
Yeah, it's not. And this gentleman, Daniel Ramos, brought it back into prominence. He won't talk about that because he actually is pretty humble. But he is the person that took this region 25 years ago and was like, I'm going to make this a thing, and then made it so people are actually starting to talk about it. So if you've had Grenache before, or Grenache, that's the main grape that they're using for their red wines, and the red wines are what make them popular. So normally, if you have Grenache from Priorat, or even Grenache from France, or Grenache from Australia, or Grenache from California, or anywhere, Chateauneuf du Pape, you're getting something that, although it's a thin-skinned grape, which normally thin-skinned grapes, yeah, it's a tongue twister. Normally, they're a little bit lighter-bodied wines, but with Grenache, you get closer to medium body, sometimes full-bodied, and these big, bolsterous. Now, Chateauneuf du Pape is a little more elegant, but Grenache from Spain is big, full-bodied, and just a lot of the aging, and you're expecting this full, powerful wine. Right. So the Grenache from Grenache de Gredos, or the Sierra de la Gredos Mountains, is built to be made, like what they say, Burgundian style. So Pinot Noir-like. So these are light, refreshing, elegant styles of Grenache, which is, if you just went and picked it up, if you were a Grenache drinker and you grabbed one off the shelf or ordered it at a restaurant without somebody telling you it was a different style, you probably would be disappointed. because it's so much lighter and does not drink like Grenache. It has the same markers. You get some darker fruit, you get kind of a black licorice thing. You know it's Grenache, but you would be surprised when somebody told you still because of how elegant they are. So that's the style they're bringing back, but that's because it's in the mountains and because the terroir, so the area, is so unique. So they're letting it speak for themselves. They're letting the grapes do the talking. And for white, to get even weirder, they make Albiol Real, which for the longest time, it was the top Albiol Real producing region in Spain, which you'll hear about more. Right. But essentially,
so describe if I was if I've never heard of Albiol Real, I'm sure I mispronounced that. But describe that, like, if you could, to someone who hasn't ever had this wine before, how would you describe that?
Got it. So I can't speak for all Albiol Real, but how they make it in the Sierra de los Gredos DO, so region, is it's a rich, lush style. Usually they have some oak aging. So to me, if I were to like put two grapes together that people drink, it'd be like if Viognier and Chardonnay had a beautiful little baby. Because it's like, it's super floral, but it's rich and powerful. And we think Chardonnay drinkers would enjoy it.
Yes.
But again, it's still a little bit funky. And they also make a lot of rosé, and the rosé they're making, they use oak on as well. And the rosé is crazy.
It was insane. It was out of this world.
And so the last two you don't see as much of, but the Grenache from the higher elevation in these mountains is what they specialize in. And so when we met Daniel, we kind of walked right in, and he's tall. And yeah. I really felt like that Blair and I were taller than everybody in Spain except for Daniel.
Correct.
And so that stereotype was true. Like, I'm only 6'1", and we found out the other day that Blair is 6 foot and
I'm
half an inch.
I'm also 6'1", so, as well.
No, half an inch shorter than me.
We're both 6'1".
But pretty much the whole rest of Spain, we were taller by like a full head than everybody. But Daniel was massive. We kind of find out he's from Australia. He moved to Madrid, and how he says, he married the only woman in the area that wasn't a part of a winemaking family, so he started his own.
Right.
which is kind of cool. And then he fell in love with the style and started producing. So let's go to a clip that we actually recorded with Daniel at his winery. Or before we go to the clip, we could tell you what it was.
It'd
be nice, right?
Yeah.
So this is right after we walked in the winery and made the introductions. Daniel jumps in and gives us a history from his perspective of the region that we were in. And so we apologize if the audio is not as good as we wanted, but we think it really captures the moment pretty well. So Daniel's going to give us his rundown of the history of the region.
Well, it's quite old anyway.
Between 13 and 1500.
Yeah, it's the adventures of a Lazarus, of a kid that was a Lazarus for a blind man that was kind of wealthy in those ages. Well, everyone that could eat every day was wealthy in those ages. Right? And he just passed by through this area, and he talks about the good albillos from San Martín, Cebreros, you know, because by then it was all one. So in those centuries, the 17th century, the Albillo Real was common to San Martín de Valdeiglesias, that is now the Real Madrid, and Cebreros.
Okay.
But it was considered the best Albillo Real in the whole country. Well, there wasn't much anywhere around anyway.
Yeah.
There was a little bit in Zamora and so. And those wines really became famous in the 17th century. They were wines that could only be drank by the people in court in Madrid.
Wow. Okay.
By the royalty, you know. So it's like something.
The specials,
something special. So, well, we try to recreate those wines again, and well, I don't know if they are the same at all because I haven't been in the 17th century.
No, the idea is there. That's just very interesting.
Yeah, and you've got some books and you've got some stuff, so you've got the idea of what it could have been, no? There isn't any detail of how they were made, except for the amphoras and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, I try to recreate it and try to adapt it to the taste that we've got nowadays.
Thanks, Daniel. It's like he's right here, right? So, and to kind of pick up where he left off, it's exactly what they are doing. They're taking this style that he read about in all the historical pages that they have and trying to recreate it in a style that people would want today. And we really think that he's accomplished it.
Yeah.
And so for note, the next winery that we're talking about, Daniel's the winemaker at the winery. He doesn't own this next winery. And that's kind of something that we'll get into a lot as we do these podcasts about who's winemaking for who and all these things. Everybody's working together. But the big thing that maybe is something that got lost in that clip is what a clay amphora is. So they're using these clay pots, essentially massive clay pots, to age the wine in. They do use barrels as well, but they're using these clay amphora, which just, it adds some texture, they believe, to the wines. But a lot of people that are organic or natural wineries, if you've heard it before, natural wine meaning they're letting the wine speak for themselves, they're not adding any pesticides, they're not adding any sulfur, they're not doing anything to the wine or the grapes at all, and which is a newer thing, even though it's an older thing. And so, and he didn't say that he was natural, but if you hear everything that he said, he was. And so clay amphora are what they used a long time ago, a really long time ago, to age wine. And now they're using it again to try to recreate it.
The other thing you might not have caught was that a Lazarus is someone who helps a blind man. So.
Oh, yeah, that was nice. We had to look that up. But that's at the beginning of the story, basically, a blind man's helper is who was the one who helped start everything. With the wine region. So we went from there with Daniel. Actually, Jesus showed up to the winery. And so again, picture this. So we haven't really given you, like, it's a warehouse. This place we were at talking to Daniel is a warehouse.
That's why
it
was so full. Echoey.
It was very echoey. Yeah, it is a big warehouse. Well, not even that big. Full of all of his wine, his personal wine. There's a gentleman there named Maria as well, who works for Sierra de los Gredos, the government designation of those wines, and sells them. And helps like promote the region. So he was there. He didn't speak a lot of English. And then our friend Jesus was there, who we kind of scuffled over his name a little bit afterwards. And I ended up emailing him with the wrong name because I trusted Blair and Jay. And he emails me back and says, you know, my name actually was Jesus. Like, oh, great. Thanks. Should have just trusted myself there, but that's okay.
Well, win some, you lose some get rained out.
Yeah, I guess. So I really just got lucky. Anyway, Jesus came. And let's take a quick, before we jump in, for those that are watching on video, we are recording this for YouTube as well. For those that are watching on video, if you look behind us, we do have some pictures up on the screen of us in these vineyards, and we're kind of just letting them scroll. But you can, if you're not on video, pull up the website, look at the pictures we posted. If you are, just kind of watch behind us as we're going. So,
the meat and cheese they served us was incredible. Keith ate almost an entire omelet by himself.
Yes, and that's what, so we met, perfect, I like that. I'd still eat that right now.
I know.
Even though we just had lunch. So Jesus came, and he's the owner of the winery that was interested in importing with us.
Right.
And Daniel is the winemaker there, and Daniel is what we would call a champion for the region. He wants his regional wines to be popular no matter who's selling them, even if it's not him. But he is helping make the wine for Jesus and his family. And so we went with Jesus and Daniel further up into the mountains, even though we did not think that was possible, right near their little town of Avila, named after the province we were in Spain. And the town of Avila is 200 people. Not 2,000, 200. And that's where Jesus's family's from. And we drove up to their vineyards. And it was an experience like I can't really describe. So although the whole Spanish trip was that same way, these are not vineyards like you've ever seen before, unless you've like actually researched them and looked at them. They were so unique. So to start, we were up in the corners of these mountains. And so we were driving like through what felt like the rainforest to get to some of these places.
Right. It felt like if you were at Jurassic Park and your car got pushed by a dinosaur into the open field, and then you were trying to climb a mountain in a Jeep.
That... Yes.
But then it was wineries all around you.
Yeah, it felt really good, except for without Chris Pratt.
Right.
Everything else was good. But we so we drove up and we looked at a few of the vineyards and we got out at all of them. And if you see the pictures, you can kind of see this. But they were all bush vines.
Yeah.
So if you've pictured a winery like you know it in your mind, they are what they call trellised up onto their train to go a certain way. And that's where like the rows look nice and they're all perfectly manicured. And that's what you're picturing in your head as a winery. If you don't do that to the vines, they just look like a bush. And a lot of the older grapes or older vines that have been planted, these are very old vines. Mm-hmm. They leave like that, and that's how they grow them. So there's no rhyme or reason. There's these bushes in the ground. The soil was unique from vineyard to vineyard.
Right, from one plot to the next.
And the plots were really small. One of the plots was what they called big, but it was barely a couple acres. Like these are very small plots, really hard to farm. Because we could barely drive there.
Well, and then they left all of the natural... I dropped a piece of meat on accident while I was there, and they're like, oh, no, leave it. Like, it's part of the natural environment now. Like, they were very much... everything that grows there is going to be a part of the terroir that these grapes are going to communicate to the drinker.
You almost called them a hippie.
No, I did not.
I know you didn't, but it kind of sounds like. Like, it's a natural... No, it's just... It's the natural winemaking style. They just want to leave it all how it is, and which is great, too. It's just a different way... It's a different way to do things, and all to each their own. But you could really, the wines could speak to you. And after standing in the vineyards, you could taste everything. You could taste what you saw, especially all the flowers and the vegetation and all those things come out in the wines. We made a stop for what they called lunch, and we met the rest of Jesus's family, Juanito and everybody. We hop out, and they drive into this vineyard, essentially a new vineyard that they got. And they just acquired, and we were walking in the vineyard, and Juanito comes running from the car. He didn't speak any English, with a like carrying table, a bunch of stuff. Yep. He had a table, and he threw the table down in the middle of the vineyard, and then got out all this meat and cheese and bread that they made. And it's like unleavened bread made from some historic oven.
Look, this bread was on another level. The bread had this really hard crust to it, but then was like, what do we say, like angel food cake, like super
spongy, like pound cake or almost. Yeah,
on the inside. And they were like, oh, the way this bread's made, you could leave this on your counter for like 2 weeks and it would never, like there's no preservatives in it, but it won't go bad. It was insane. And it tasted awesome too.
Yeah, it really did. And so we stood and we had tortilla, which is, it's like an egg casserole that has onions and potatoes and cheese, but they let it cook for like 4 hours. So it's like a slow cooked it was unreal. It was like a slow cook egg casserole. Yeah, and I would have had the whole thing if I had my choice at it. But we stood in one of their vineyards and ate and got to know them and drank some of their wines. And then we spent the rest of the afternoon bouncing from vineyard to vineyard and checking everything out. And we did a lot of, like we do, pictures and drone footage and all those things. And we just got to know these people. And I mean, one of the vineyards that we were at was up on top of these, like near these rocks, and there was a goat farmer there just doing his goat thing, and they were just like climbing up the mountains. And
you mean a shepherd?
A shepherd, yeah. Goat farmer. Like yeah, it's all the same. I mean, and it's not, but, and we sit on the edge of this rock and we're looking out into the Great Ouse Mountains, and the wind was just blowing enough, and it was like the most picturesque shot that I've ever seen before. Yeah. And all we could think was, man, this is the first day of this trip. And so these people were wonderful. And after touring all day and driving through the back mountains of the Great Ouse Mountains, we went down into Avila and went to the winery, Bodega Nieto Senora Maria, which is what Jesus's winery is. He named it after his grandma and their family grandma. And it's literally a garage winery. So you've heard of garage wineries before. It is in a garage.
Yep.
And they're getting bigger. They're actually bottling their first bottles in 2 weeks that they've ever made. So if we end up, and we think we're going to work with them, but we're working with some different things with them, it will be the first bottles that they've ever made at this winery they're going to be letting us sell in the United States. So we're really excited to be able to do that and to be able to see what they have to offer. And so it was about as unique as I've ever seen when it comes to how the vineyards were built, how small the plots were. And go to our website, and it's not up to date yet, but we will have pictures of all of these things all over the website, so you can really see and check the videos out that we have over everything. But it was about as cool of an experience as I've ever had, especially unexpected.
Right.
But the wines were wonderful. They were light, they were elegant, and they really did exactly what they said they were going to. And so, you know, that kind of wraps up the end of our trip to the Sierra de los Gredos. But for those of you that have heard of Jancis Robinson, you'll really appreciate this. Those that haven't, really look into who she is. She's a master of wine from the UK and is one of the most is one of the top wine writers ever in wine. She has a website you can look up. It's all very great information. But she is she's a pioneer for what we all do. So I always look to her when I'm looking for different things. And she had a quote about the Sierra de los Gredos that I really think nails it on the head. Because as much fun as it was, there are some things about it that we have to wait to see. So Jansen says, Gredos has already received recognition as a unique wine region, but I hope they will be given their own appellation, as nothing looks more like a real geographical unit than the Sierra de Gredos. So right now, if you got the wines, they would say Vinos de Madrid on the label, not Sierra de Gredos. That's because the government has not defined it yet, because it's so new and so unique, they haven't been able to define it. So although these wines were wonderful, they are something that they're too far ahead almost for where we think a lot of wine drinkers are at. Now, it doesn't mean we're not going to still work with them, because there are applications, and people that are super into geeky wines will really like these. Yeah. But Jansen nailed it on the head that she hopes that the government recognizes how unique this region is, because it does not get much more unique than how that region was built.
Yeah.
And so we left there, went back by the bullfighting ring, which is kind of crazy. Still nobody in there. And then we took our drive up north to Rioja. And actually, on the way, we stopped in a town called Aranda del Duero for dinner, which is about halfway. And
had an amazing dinner.
We did, and we didn't know what to expect. We just got out of the car.
Yeah.
And although Jay spoke Spanish and spoke Spanish well enough, we still did not really know where we were going.
Right.
But we walked into a restaurant, ordered some tempranillo, and apparently they killed a baby lamb that day, because they serve not veal, as much as I love veal, they serve baby lamb. And a lot of the restaurants in the middle of the country had similar dishes, but I ordered baby lamb shoulder.
I ordered baby lamb kidneys.
Kidneys.
Our waiter, who I'm pretty sure was also the chef, tried to talk me out of it and said, no, you want the ribs. And I was like, no, I think I want the kidneys. That's unique. That's different. I'll try it.
He says, Estados Unidos, you want the ribs. Like, we're from the U.S. Trust me, you want the ribs. But it's a good thing that Blair stayed confident on that, because as good as my shoulder and as good as Jay's leg was, the little pepino peppers on the kidneys was it was unreal. It was so good. So that was a really cool, like, hey, let's just stop in this town.
Yeah.
Random place to go eat. Yeah. And kind of set the tone for the rest of the trip. And so we drove up north and got into Oro, which is the capital of Rioja, late that night. And then our next podcast will pick up kind of right where we left off here and start in the Rioja region. Thanks a lot for listening.
Yeah.
I hope you move right on to episode number two, to Rioja. So until next time, cheers.